Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 80 for October 24th, 2008, PDC Preview. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. And by GoToMyPC, wherever you go, access your PC and all your files, programs, and email remotely with GoToMyPC. For a free trial of this award-winning service, visit GoToMyPC.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Time to take a look at the wild and wonderful world of Microsoft. Everything from Xbox, Windows Live, Windows 7, stuff. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 with Mr. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And he's also news editor at Windows IT Pro and the author of the brand new and fantastic Windows Vista Secrets. From Dedham, Massachusetts, he's weeping.
The center of the technology universe.
Weeping tears over his Red Sox.
No, I'm actually okay with the way things went with those guys.
Well, you have the Celtics.
I don't mean it like that. Given the injuries that they were able to get as far as they got against what it was clearly a superior team, was fine.
And you gotta love the scrappy team that has, you know, the salary of the parking lot attendant at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
well, actually, what I really enjoy now is getting to go to bed at a normal time.
Yeah, you know, I was
one of the troubles
that.
With our tour lately.
I was watching the world, especially Game 4.
So last night we were watching the game and 11 o'clock came and we just said, let's go to bed. And then we did. And when we got up in the morning, the score hadn't changed. So we actually didn't miss a thing.
But if you missed Game 4, if you went to bed at a normal hour for Game 4 of the ALCS, you would be like,
not to.
Oh, good man.
I stayed up for that. I stayed up.
Good man.
And we went up, you know, Thursday night we stayed up and we watched all these games, you know. And I was at an all day Microsoft event on Friday. So I had to get up early and commute, which was wonderful. And I recommend that highly if you don't do that on a daily basis. It's good stuff. And nothing like sitting in traffic. But so there was a game Saturday night late, Sunday night late. You know, it was great. It's been a great couple of days. So,
I'm watching and I'm seeing it's 9 o'clock our time. And I'm thinking, Red Sox fans must be just dying. Well, they got to go
last
to work.
Year. They went the distance in every single series. So we were up. We didn't sleep the entire month of October. So it's been sort of like that this year. But
well, it's been fun for Boston sports fans last year or so.
You know, what stinks, though, is, of course, if the Red Sox had been in the World Series, I would have missed some of the stuff because of PDC next week. But what I am going to miss is the Celtics raising the banner on their championship season is happening on the 28th. And I'm going to be in Los Angeles and I have tickets to that game.
Oh, man. You know, your brother will be there. He'll call you.
I talked to him last night about this. I said, I do not want to hear any baloney from you and your
Celtics.
Buddy at this game. What a great time it was.
Celtics.
You should have been. Yeah.
Oh, golly gosh almighty. You know, next time you've got that long commute into Boston for the Microsoft event, you might want to bring an Audible book with you, Paul Thurrott.
I did bring an Audible book with me.
Did you? Doesn't that take the sting out of it? I was saying the other, I think it was yesterday, that the best thing about, you know, the only thing that I could say in favor of commuting was that I would always be listening to these great books. And now, because everything's chopped up, I listen to Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere in like 5 minute, 10 minute segments, maybe 20 minutes, and I didn't want to put the book down. It's such a good book, and I was thinking, gosh, I miss those 2 hour drives I used to have. What were you listening to?
Well, before I get to that, I was going to say the problem here is that I live in Massachusetts, so I actually miss much of the book in the car because everyone here drives like an idiot.
They're screaming and yelling.
And I don't know if you know the term. We have a term here, mass hole.
Yes, to describe the incidents.
So what I was trying to listen to was Hannibal, the Thomas Harris.
You need something more calming than that.
Well, actually, that one was an okay one because I'm actually very familiar with the book. I literally just rewatched the movie, and I think I must have recommended it a few weeks ago because I've just been into this stuff lately for whatever reason again. But I think if it was something I wasn't familiar with, I would have been very distraught.
Yeah, because you would have lost it out. Well, yeah. I'm going to tell you my Audible pick, but first let me tell you a little bit about Audible. You know, if you listen to the show, Audible is the place to get audiobooks, great audiobooks of all kinds. 51,000 titles, everything from lectures, comedy shows, radio shows, the debates, the conventions, and of course, tens of thousands of books and more all the time. And I'm always browsing the Audible website. I mean, it really is like having this great bookstore on your computer. You decide to buy a book, you click it. It's downloaded within a couple of minutes. You put it on your iPod, your iPhone, your Sansa, your TomTom, your Garmin, burn a CD, listen on your computer. I got a great choice for you today. I have to preface it by saying I haven't listened to it yet. I can't wait to listen to it. It is a book called Biology, but it's not spelled like you think. B-U-Y. O-L-O-G-Y. Yeah. Truths and Lies About Why We Buy. Did you know, for instance, they did the largest, they call it neuromarketing study ever conducted to find out why people buy, why ads work or don't work. And I think, you know, given all the conversation you and I have had about the Microsoft and the Apple ads, this is really telling stuff. For instance, and you might have seen this story in the paper in the last couple of days, they found out by looking at brain scans, that big brands like iPod, for instance, trigger the same part of the brain that religious feelings come from.
Well, I think I would have.
You're not surprised, are you?
I'd do that regardless. Yeah, okay.
But these kind of brand loyalty, it goes very, very deep. They also found out, this was a surprise, sex does not sell. People in skimpy clothing and provocative poses just don't work in ads. And despite government bans, there is lots of subliminal advertising going on. Martin Lindstrom wrote this, narrated by Don Leslie. I have already put it in my cart for my next download. I can't wait to hear Truths and Lies About Why We Buy Biology. This is the kind of listening you can do, not just fiction, but nonfiction. You'd learn, you enjoy. If you want to get this book free, go to audible.com/windows and sign up today. You'll get a credit toward a book, and this is it. This would be a great one to listen to, but there are many, many, many more choices. In fact, the toughest thing about signing up right now for Audible is picking just one. Audible.com/windows. We thank them for their support and for making it safe to go out amongst the mass holes in beautiful downtown Dedham. So, did you see that study that said that the their brand was akin to almost religious fervor or love? Same area of the brain. That would explain a lot, wouldn't it? You know, the religious wars people have over, say, Mac versus PC.
I was just wondering, I think it was last night, we were watching TV and ads were on, and advertising on TV infuriates me. It's always really loud.
Yes.
It's humorous to me what they advertise on certain channels and on certain shows. Do people actually pay attention to this stuff?
Well, it must work. Wait a minute. Yes, it works. Advertising. I love it. No, actually, I have to say, I don't think advertising on TV works as well as it used to. In fact, I think people are
too distracted these days.
One of the reasons that you noticed it last night is because you were compelled to watch live.
Yeah. Oh, that's, and by the way, you always notice it when it's on live, and it drives my children insane. They'll always ask, you know, how come you're not fast forwarding?
Yeah, because most of the time you're on a TiVo and you skip it.
Yeah.
So does advertising work? I think increasingly less so. And one of the reasons they amp up the volume and buy big events like the World Series and Super Bowl is because otherwise they're speaking to nobody. That's why I think I'm hopeful. That's why netcast advertising is going to go up, is because people listen to the ads that we do. That's one of the reasons we do them the way we do them, with content in there to encourage you to listen. You know, we talk about books because we hope that you'll listen to the ad.
Sure.
I don't know. I agree with you. And so sometimes when I, you know, when we talk about these Mac versus PC ads and the Vista ads, I think you're right. I think it's inside baseball for a lot of it. I don't think most people are paying any attention to what we're doing.
Yeah, that was sort of a wake-up call for me, because I had criticized that latest Apple ad on the blog, but not for that reason. And yeah, that's interesting.
You mentioned that before we began recording, so tell me the story again.
What story?
You were talking to somebody about the ad, and he said, "What's that all about?" He didn't get the Apple ad because he didn't know ahead of time the whole backstory of Microsoft spending a lot of money on advertising.
Right. Which was sort of an eye opener. Like I said, obviously you and I and the people who listen to this would see this ad and be in on the
right.
Not really the joke, but the setup for this ad. You get it.
We know the backstory. Yeah.
But I don't know. The notion of Microsoft paying whatever they're paying for ads for however long they're running to talk about the PC and cast it in a more positive light. People may not understand why they're doing it at this point in time, but at least they get the ad. The Apple ad. I mean, I guess when you think about it, it is kind of odd. Plus, it's a little disingenuous. We're putting all this money toward Vista instead of fixing its problems, when in fact, whatever problems it had were fixed a long, long time ago.
Right. And by the way, is this not an Apple ad? I mean, but people don't think people. That's the thing about ads; they're visceral. I mean, that's what we're seeing with these. With these sure. studies, is it's not about it's not talking. It's talking to your lizard brain. It's not talking to your rational brain. It's talking to your lizard brain.
Well, but I think there's a third brain, and it's one that involves morals and doing the right thing. And I don't understand why it's okay to lie in an ad like that. I have a big problem with that ad.
Do you think all the people in the I'm a PC ad actually use PCs?
Yes, Leo, I think that's why they're in the ads.
I know. I think they're random actors.
Wow. Okay.
I don't think they're real people. I think they're actors. But that's okay. That's I'm just what I'm pointing out is that advertising is inherently deceptive. Not our ads.
I don't want to get too into this because honestly, I can't say that I care too much. But
right.
I guess all I would say to that is the people in the I'm a PC ads may or may not be actors. Apple is lying in that ad.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Whatever. But
it's comedy.
Okay. So
it's comedy.
I don't know. Okay. Fair enough.
It's comedy.
Well, maybe Apple should start a sitcom. Where I'm a PC comes home to his dumpy wife every day, and the Mac guy has this sexy young wife, and they could turn it into a full blown comedy spectacular.
They could hire Kramer. Kramer.
Kramer would be the Linux guy.
He's
the crazy haircut. He's a little out of tune with reality.
he's in the purgatory right now. He's discredited. We can't use Kramer. Gotcha. So I actually have a little bit of a conflict here, and you're gonna appreciate this. PDC is coming up. Let's say what does it start? Tomorrow? Next day?
Sunday, Monday.
Sunday. Yeah. And then we're gonna do a PDC wrap-up show. November 2nd, guess who I've booked accidentally, and I'm going to have to rebook him for November 2nd.
Barack Obama.
No, John Hodgman, PC.
Oh, that PC guy.
I should have him come on the PDC show.
Sure.
You'll love that.
Does he understand? I mean, is he involved with computers such that he even understands the evil he has wrought onto the world?
He listens he listens to many of our shows. I don't think he listens to this one, but he listens to many of our
shows. He's hilarious. I mean, I love him.
I don't think he's paying too much attention to
No, he's perfect. I mean,
the
he's
nuance
great.
Of what he's doing. I will ask him how he likes the guy at Microsoft who wears the cords and the who looks just like him. I'll be very curious what he says about that. That guy's an engineer, right? He's an actual engineer at Microsoft.
Yeah.
So, are you ready for? Are you excited? I know, PD, this is a big deal. I mean, we're going to have you. We're going to have Jerry Pornell on.
I see. Yeah. Well, you're talking about after PDC, right?
Yeah. This is a week from Sunday on Twitter.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. So.
No. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'm not going to make you do anything before then.
Sunday is going to be a little tight for me, Leo. coming Sunday.
No.
A week from Sunday will be great.
Yes. You'll be relaxed. You'll be calm. You'll be loaded with knowledge. What kind of things are they going to tell you?
All kinds of things. I'm freaking out. We just had, I don't know how this is going to communicate on the final version of the podcast, but our technical difficulties today were a beautiful end cap to what has been a wonderful day and a wonderful week of, you know, trying to prepare for this trip. But honestly, I at this point, I'm going to be happy just to get out there in one piece with all, everything that I need and get everything out of the way that I have to get done while I'm there. It's going to be a busy, busy time. But I'm looking forward to Windows 7 primarily at the show, and I think most people are. But honestly, as we've said in the past, you know, Microsoft is going to be talking a lot about other things as well, including the live platform that they're doing, the Cloud OS, you know, Windows Strata, whatever they may call that.
Hey, do me a favor. Move your mic up a little bit. It's you're sounding a little echoey.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds so much better.
Does it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited about Strata or Windows Live or Mesh or whatever they're calling it. But that's the thing I'm going to be paying most of the attention to. We've talked about this before. I'm really thinking Windows 7 last you know, kind of desktop based operating system for Microsoft.
Do you think so?
Well, maybe
I don't know. I would put it this way. Obviously, mainstream computing, I think, is going to head toward the web and to mobile devices more and more over the years. That's true across the board. It has nothing to do with Windows. It's just the way it is. You know, they'll keep doing Windows. You know, Windows will always be important in some ways. You know, there are certain tasks that are just easier to do is sitting in front of a computer.
Well, and you will need something to run the browser on, I guess.
So, sure, but that could be anything if you think about it. If we're just doing things on a browser, I mean that could be very lightweight potentially. But
do you think the trend towards netbooks is a indicator that people have already accepted the idea of cloud computing and that they're ready for it? Because you know Dvorak is not a big believer in cloud computing, but
yeah.
It seems to me that the fact that netbooks do that well is telling.
Yeah. Netbooks are still sort of a niche kind of market.
Are they?
You know, I don't know that they've really sold in the multi millions yet. I think they're indicative of a couple of different things. I mean, one is that people are at the point where they're looking for second and third computers and they don't want to spend $800 or $1,000 or $1,500 on that, you know, secondary computer. I think there are situations with families where they have children where they want a reduced function set because they want the kids to focus on whatever it is they may be doing for school or whatever. But it also, with the economy the way it's going, I mean, you may see more and more people turning to these low-end computers just as computers. And that's kind of interesting. But I think they're just a bridge between what will be the future of mobile computing on smartphones or their successors and, you know, desktop computing or notebook type computing that we have today. So I think they're just they're like crossover vehicles, you know, between an SUV and a car. You know, netbooks they're just kind of in the middle.
Yeah. You know,
I don't know. It's hard to get exciting about the problem with them. You think about it. It's not just on the Windows side, right? You have to get Windows XP with these things, right? Not Windows Vista, because Windows Vista is a big operating system. It requires resources that aren't available on these systems. Okay. But, you know, the other choice is Linux, right? And most versions of Linux, the ones especially that are on these netbooks, not very exciting either. But, you know, on the other hand, I suppose that's not the end point. You know, the reason you get one is not the OS. It's the things you can do with it.
Yeah, it's the browser and the email.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what people use it for. I don't know.
Okay, so what's the difference, or what is the utility difference between a netbook, a real netbook, you know, like a clamshell-type laptop computer,
right,
and an iPod Touch?
Well, increasingly less. That's been my point about these new smartphones. And I've been playing with the G1, and it's the same thing. They're computers almost first,
right?
And a lot of what you look at when you review, I'm just reviewing now the new G1 T-Mobile Google phone, and the first thing you look at is the browser and the applications and the internet connection and the connectivity, and not what kind of phone is it. That's the last thing you look at.
Sure.
These are portable.
You sort of hope that stuff just works, right?
Yeah.
You know, you should be able to type in a number and make a phone call, or it should be able to get your contacts on there or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's not the most difficult thing these things do, let me tell you.
Well, what is Windows 7 going to... What do you think you're going to see at PDC? What is Windows 7 going to do to keep alive the desktop?
Windows 7 is a weird deal because it's really just the next version of Windows Vista. And they can't market it like that, can they?
Right? Yeah, I mean, wouldn't if I were you.
You guys are loving Vista so much, we thought we'd serve up another teaspoon spoonful of that stuff.
And then the other pitfall is, well, we know you didn't want Vista, so we have seven instead. I mean,
yeah, they're in kind of a tough spot.
You can't say that either.
Yeah. So Windows 7.
And you can't say even better than Vista, because
it's because Windows Vista is already perfect.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Let me try to say that without laughing. Because Windows Vista is already here today. No, I think that Windows 7 is going to be, well, I know that Windows 7 is the next version of Windows Vista. This is a fact, right? So it's Windows 7, it's Windows Vista, you know, plus or minus some stuff. And it's funny because they are taking some stuff away. And there are weird issues around that because, you know, there are really very real things you can do for performance. And then there are pretend things you can do for performance that make people actually very happy with you. So, for example, you could make Windows boot faster and then you can point to that and say, look, Windows, you know, it boots faster. And that's very real. And that's something you can prove if it's true. And then there are fake things you can do. Like you can say, well, you complained that Windows was bloated, so we took out all these applications and you can optionally download them from the web. And now it's less bloated, just like you asked. It doesn't actually change the performance of the thing, but people think that it does. So, you know, it makes people happy. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. So there's going to be that kind of stuff, you know.
I think some of the problems they're having with Vista come, or they're going to, with perception in Vista, they're going to have with Windows 7, which is that the days of a major new feature in an operating system are long gone.
Exactly. But I think they're actually addressing that head on with this one. And that's what's interesting about Windows 7. So the one thing that hasn't gotten a lot of press is that Microsoft has really changed the way they develop Windows now. And the thing that really blows me away about Windows 7 is, and I bet they discussed this at PDC, I'd be surprised if they didn't really jump all over this, is this. Unlike with previous versions of Windows, where as they were developing them, there would be all these features in there. And let's say Windows Vista has 100 different features. And so at any point during development, any one of those 100 features could be at any level of completeness. You know, some of them would be 10% done, some would be 50% done, some would be 100% done. And for whatever reason, you know, here's beta 2, here's beta 3, here's the release candidate. And then hopefully when you ship the final version, everything's 100% done. But there was no way you could go back to beta 2 and say, well, this thing's ready for prime time, because so much of it was unready, right? With Windows 7, the way they're doing it is, stuff doesn't get into the Windows 7 build unless it's 100% done.
Good.
So that thing that we're going to get at PDC will not be feature complete, but the features that are in there, they'll be done.
That's an interesting way of doing it. That's a really interesting. And why would you do it that way? Because, I mean, traditionally a beta is not, nobody expects betas to be done.
Exactly. And we're not even getting a beta. It's a pre-beta. And I'm not suggesting, by the way, that they aren't going to change things. Of course they are. So even though we may get something at the end of October, you know, February will come around, we'll get something, you know, an updated version of that same thing. But what this allows them to do is down the road, and I think less far down the road than people imagine, is they can just draw the line and say, we're done, and they can ship it on that day, whatever it is. And that sounds sort of arbitrary, and maybe it is, but it sort of cuts to the heart of, you know, how do you deal with this major new version of Windows thing, which is you don't. You don't really worry about it.
Right.
You reach a certain, you know, point in time, really. Not so much a stage in development, but a point in time. And you say, you know what? It's August. We want to hit the school season. Let's ship this thing.
Right.
It's done. It's done as it is.
Whatever's in there is baked. Yeah. There's no raw dough.
That's an interesting way to do it. I don't think this is something they can do every single version, but it is something they're doing this time.
Yeah. I think actually that makes a lot of sense. It certainly will respond to people who have, you know, I mean, that might have been some of the problems with the initial release of Vista. Will we see a new file system, or is NTFS going to be?
No, it's going to be NTFS.
No WinFS. We'll see IE8.
Yeah, I mean, you can point to things. I mean, there's going to be the multi-touch capabilities they talked about. There's going to be the voice capabilities, which haven't gotten a lot of press, although you and I have talked about it here in the podcast, where you'll be able to talk. You know, I actually wrote something today, and I compared it to, you know, the scene in Star Trek 4 when Scotty grabs the mouse on the Mac and he says, you know, turn on computer,
right.
You know. He was clearly a Windows 7 user because that's, you know, that's the way that would work. And that's kind of cool.
Now, maybe now I'm thinking maybe that's the ad for Windows 7.
Yes. It's too bad James is gone, of course. But
maybe it's something like this.
Hello, computer.
Just use the keyboard.
The keyboard. How quaint.
Now, see, if I were, if you know, that would be good in the ad.
Sure. Yeah, that would be good in the end. I agree. There's I hope we're not blowing it away for them because that's something they should do.
Do you think people are ready for, I mean, frankly, I've long thought if you're going to make a big leap in operating systems,
yeah,
it's going to be something like that. You know, the keyboard is, what, 18th century, 19th century technology.
But I don't think they need to make that big leap. I really think that's the point. You know, they're talking about this thing as a major release, but that doesn't mean we're changing everything, right? I think it's more important that they just evolve the thing over time and not worry about, you know, we have to move to spatial 3D computing or something. You know, right. We have to change the file system. Not really. You know, you're going to get there over time. You know, they've had this tablet PC and touch stuff for a long time. They've worked with different form factors and different size machines. They're going to do multi-touch in this release. They're going to do voice in this release. But, you know, these are the things, you know, they sort of evolve it. And then at some point, you know, you may look back and say, well, I'm using Windows, but now it's on a wall or on a table and there's no keyboard. But in some other instances, there will be a keyboard. So, yeah, I mean, the keyboard is a blast from the past in many ways, but it's also the quickest way to enter text.
It happens
if
to
that's
work.
What you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not what we're always going to be doing with the computer, but when you are doing that thing, the keyboard makes sense.
It really is. And maybe it's just this probably happens, you know, anytime there's a paradigm shift on the horizon. It's really hard to imagine what you could do on a computer that would, I mean, maybe it feels like we're here, we're done. You know, the mouse, the keyboard.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah. Well, it does, but
it can't possibly be true.
But, well, hold on. But there have been surprises along the way, haven't there? You can point to things like Office 2007, where you would have said, wow, well, I thought we had done word processing. Like, there's nothing else we can do here. And then they come out with the ribbon. You're like, well, actually, you know, that is interesting. Or things like the iPhone, which is not a Microsoft product, but really changed the game. It did, right? In the mobile space.
Yeah.
And it makes it opens your eyes to other possibilities that maybe weren't obvious before. So I think the more important thing with Windows and on the desktop specifically is that, you know, the computing market is evolving. It's going into new markets, one thing, but the people who've been around for a long time, like us, who've been using computers for a long time, you know, are getting more sophisticated and can handle different things. And you know, the computers and the systems that run on them have to adapt to that. But sometimes you can take too long to develop something. You know, Windows 2000 before Vista was something that had been in the can for a long time. And in some ways, technology had kind of passed it by, you know, that it was entering the market sort of after the fact and that it was addressing the problems of the last war. And Windows Vista was even worse in that regards because if you're not shipping things quickly, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
And then you have much ground to make up in the next release.
Apple's kind of doing that with its next version of OS X, the Snow Leopard. They said, we're not going to add features.
Yeah. I mean, they are, of course, going to add some features. But Apple's operating system is mature, just like Windows is. So you run into a different thing. It's really easy to add 300 new features when the first version of your product couldn't play DVD movies.
Right.
You know, or whatever. So
right.
5 years down the road, or I guess 7 years, 7 years down the road for both XP Now and Mac OS X, the world has changed and this thing has evolved along with it. So where do you go?
What if you did something, here's something unheard of. Mm-hmm. It uses less memory, less CPU power. It runs on older. Could that ever happen?
Well, it is happening. That's what mobile devices are.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
listen,
Windows 7, what if Windows 7 were just more efficient? The Toyota Prius of Windows, you know?
That's actually a good point. It probably is something that you could consider Windows 7 to be. I mean,
that you could sell. People, I mean, that you could say, hey, we're lighter, we're tighter.
Yeah. Okay. But it still has to do everything that the predecessor did, right?
Yeah. No, we're just as powerful, but we run into, we're tighter code. We've,
yeah,
I don't know.
Tighter code. There you go. You sound like Bill Gates now.
I want tighter code.
Yeah.
It should run in a gigabyte. It should run in half a gigabyte.
Maybe it doesn't matter, though.
Maybe it doesn't matter. You're right. That's not, you know, maybe people are going to say, well, so what? I got 8 gigabytes. I don't care.
That's the thing. I mean, I just built a system for $1,000 that has 8 gigs of RAM.
Right.
I mean, and the RAM was not the big expense, let me tell you. So. Right. I don't know that matters anymore.
How about UI? I mean, you know, nowadays when the UI changes, it's eye candy. It's not, I mean, Vista from XP.
It's going to be a lot of that in Windows 7, no doubt about it.
That's what gets people to buy. They go, oh, that, you know, XP looks so old now.
It has to be colorful and pretty, and it has to squeak when you touch it, and you know, it has to do all that stuff.
It's the wide tie effect. You know, it just, you know, ties are narrow now.
Yeah.
Got to get new ones.
From a usability standpoint, though, you know, one of the things that's very irritating about Windows, and there's every sign that they're doing this in this version, is they'll change just enough of it to be irritating. You know, when you right-click on computer in the startup menu and it does something different, or when you right-click on the desktop and there are different options, you know, that stuff's happening in Windows 7. They feel the need to, you know, kind of tweak this thing every time, and clearly that's what's happening as well. So, you know, I guess it's all in the name of progress. I don't know.
You know, what else do you expect? But before we move on, anything else? It sounds like they're moving along.
I think the big deal is they're going to be, like it's going to boot up quicker. It's going to have this instant on mode. It's going to be more customizable. You know, one of the things that people have asked about is you've componentized the system so that you can add and remove all these components, but you haven't given that power to the end user. You know, I can't go in and say, I don't want Windows Photo Gallery and Windows Vista. How come I can't just remove that myself arbitrarily?
Right.
And I think they're going to add that ability, because people, they've actually blogged about this. This is one of the number one requests. I don't want this junk on my computer.
Componentized.
You know, they're okay that you put it in there, and, you know, they understand that it, you know, certain people will want it.
Right. But it should be easy to, I'm removing components.
Oh, you're making. I see. I thought you were sending me sign language.
No, I'm taking out parts. It should be that easy. You should stay, plug, you know, snap it in and snap it out.
You know, kind of thing. Okay. You're actually playing with Legos.
I am. It's like Legos. It's exactly the vision I see. Is that, boy? Wouldn't that be a cool operating system where it's not all intertwined? I mean, that's really.
You know, earlier versions of Windows used to come up during setup, and they'd have these checkboxes. You could check stuff off.
Oh, I remember
off.
That, yeah.
I want this, I want this, I want this.
Yeah.
You know, but people found that very confusing.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So now, and plus, you know, by taking it out, you can streamline setup. But now people are like, whoa, what's all this junk on my computer? I don't want this stuff.
You can't win. So, you can't win. You do what people want. They get mad.
You do, yeah, exactly. Then you do it again, and people say, why did you take away this thing? And I don't know.
So you think it's going to come out before school season? Oh,
yeah,
next
this
year?
This is basically the vibe I'm getting. I've not heard anything or anything like that.
But this new process means they could do that. They could just whenever it needs to ship, it's ready to ship.
The one thing I've heard universally from people, off the record, on the record, is you're going to be shocked by how good this thing is right now. That unlike, say, Windows Vista Beta 1, Beta 2, which were horrible, this thing is going to be, it's done. It's usable. What's there? Done. Perfect. You know,
that would be novel.
But surprising. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's part of the deal with Windows 7 is honestly erasing the bad vibes from Windows Vista. And it doesn't matter whether any of that stuff is true or not, or real or imagined or whatever. But, you know, they need to turn things around. And this goes back to the conversation I've had with these guys again and again. You know, what do we have to do to get people to adopt the next version of our system before Service Pack 1? Well, you need to ship a bunch of really high-quality releases back-to-back and show that you can do it again and again and again. And trust is something that builds up over time. And I think Windows 7 is going to be the first step. They'd probably tell you that Windows Vista Service Pack 1 was the first step. But I think Windows 7 is the first real step toward establishing this trust, where with future versions of Windows down the road that hopefully will come up much more quickly, you know, people will just trust that this thing will be okay and they won't have to worry about it. Certainly, Vista has not helped their case in that regard. That's too bad.
We're going to move along now to the Zune. Your Zune review is done now. Zune 3 review on the website.
Yeah, yeah. I took my time with this one. I think there are four parts to it. I wrote this over a month. You know, one
of
the things
so long,
that was
I've lost my Zune.
You've lost your Zune. Well, I'm sorry to hear
that. I think my son took it. Where's the Zune, Henry? It's gone. I can't find it. I really liked it too, because I love putting all the music on it, and you know, being surprised.
And I use the Zune a lot more than I used to. I think that for things like music and podcasts, you know, audiobooks, the Zune is right there, right where it needs to be. You know, I don't know if that's enough. You know, from sort of a market share standpoint or whatever. You know, or justifying the cost of development. But just as a user, I think that the Zune is right there. you know, I think where it falls short of the Apple stuff is they don't have the movies and TV shows that they need up on the store. They have some TV shows. They don't have any movies. But the truth is I rip my own movies and TV shows from DVD anyway. I prefer to travel with the little device rather than a big thing of DVDs that I may lose or whatever.
Right.
And this works for me. So it's fine. I'd have to say, you know, as the token Microsoft guy in your little stable of podcast people here, I do feel a little responsibility towards, you know, moving as much on the Windows side as I can. And I think the Zune makes it possible to do some stuff that, you know, maybe a year ago wasn't possible, as far as, you know, not using iPods or Apple stuff as much. But as I've been discussing via email with a bunch of people lately, because I've written about Windows Mobile a little bit and I've gotten some interesting feedback, you know, the iPhone is the one area right now where I still think that the Apple stuff just is unparalleled on the Windows side. And it's kind of a distressing situation because I don't see Microsoft doing anything to change that.
Even with all the crashes and everything, the blue screen that iTunes 8 brought or 7 brought.
So
you still think it's superior.
Yeah, it's not as bad as it was. And I know that's not that's sort of faint criticism or faint praise. But there is something about the iPhone, and I don't know if this is true of Android. I suspect it might be or will be at some point, that because of its interface, because of the large screen, because of the way you interact with it, you do things online in ways that you never would do on other mobile devices. I'm on Facebook on this thing. I'm on Twitter on this thing. I'm checking video game reviews with an IGN application. I'm checking live sports events on mobile versions of like ESPN and then the MLB app that we talked about previously. You can browse the web. You can check your email, get your calendar. I mean, it is certainly, you know, it has its problems. But doing that on a dinky little Windows Mobile device, A, does not work as well. But it works bad enough that I just wouldn't do it. Even if those applications were somehow made to work on this thing, it's just the interface is just not the same.
Yeah.
This is something I really think Microsoft needs to figure out. And I think that I've kind of ragged on Windows Mobile. I think some people misunderstood. I don't know that I made any kind of defense of Windows Mobile last week. I hope I didn't, because if I did, I want to be very clear. I think Windows Mobile is horribly misguided, and that they need to start this thing again from scratch, that it is just not the right system.
I have to say, with the release of now of Android, both Palm and Windows Mobile are far behind.
And that's what set up this. I think Palm's gone. I Palm's can't
history.
Them ever.
And I think I hate to lump them with Windows Mobile, but I have to say, I don't think anybody's going to buy a Windows Mobile phone. You know, it's funny. 2 years ago, the Trio 700 was the phone running either Palm or Windows. And now, bye.
Yeah, I think that Microsoft is such a big company that one of the things that they get involved in that's just bad business is they do this thing that Microsoft internally refers to as knifing the baby, which is a horrible term. But
please don't.
But it basically, but what it means is, it goes back to Windows 95. And when Windows 95 shipped, they got into some antitrust trouble. And AOL sued, and they talked to the DOJ. Well, actually, it wasn't the DOJ at first. It was the FTC, I think, I can't remember which federal organization it was, but they talked to someone and they said, look, Microsoft's going to ship this online service on their desktop that's anti-competitive and we need to be in there. And Microsoft settled and allowed AOL and CompuServe and Delphi and some other services to be in Windows 95. Do you remember?
Yeah.
They used that term back then, because what they basically did was screw over MSN to appease their competitors.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the way that it works in the Windows Mobile world is Microsoft has all these different businesses. You know, they have server businesses, they have desktop businesses, consumers and businesses, et cetera. And one of their big businesses on the server is Exchange. And they sell ActiveSync and Exchange licenses to whoever wants them, including their competitors in the mobile space. So RIM and various Nokia phones, Apple, now all have licenses to access Exchange server. Well, that's great for the Exchange team. But what that's not great for is the Windows Mobile team. And when Windows Mobile doesn't even have the best Exchange experience, you've got a problem. And when you have something like BlackBerry, which to the world is the way you access Exchange on a mobile device, not Windows Mobile, how they were able to usurp that for Microsoft is unclear to me. But everyone thinks of BlackBerry when they think of mobile email, even though the system they're accessing on the back end is Microsoft's. And it's just insane to me. So I think that they have effectively... Windows Mobile, whatever faults it may have, and it has many faults, is further being compromised by the fact that other parts of Microsoft are just screwing it over.
Right.
And for their own reasons. And, okay, but, you know, that's what happens when you have a big company. I guess it's involved in so many different markets. So I'm really concerned about Windows Mobile. Windows Mobile is okay. It's utilitarian, you know. I go back to one of those early iPhone reviews, whoever it was, that compared a Windows Mobile phone to like a Soviet-era tank when comparing it to the iPhone. Remember that?
Yeah.
I always thought that was a beautiful comparison because that's exactly what it is. It will get you from point A to point B. It will make phone calls. You can synchronize contacts. It's not very exciting. It's not very interesting, and it's not what people want.
Yeah. Well, you think they should kill it?
I do. Yeah. Well, I think they should kill what they have now, and I think they should start over from scratch.
Right.
I think that the componentization that you see on the desktop and server versions of Windows is a pathway to success for those guys, that they can componentize a single system that will have different different capabilities on different kinds of devices. There's no reason that a high-end Windows Mobile device couldn't be the equivalent of a low-end Windows laptop, you know. And they tried to get into that market before, and I'm not even saying it's a viable market, but what I'm saying is that mobile system should be a low-end version, or not even a low-end, a highly mobile version of the desktop operating system they already sell for PCs. That's what it should be.
Yeah. Problem is, it is too much like the PC operating system on a small device.
Well, it looks too much like it. Yeah. Componentization, I don't mean that it has to, it shouldn't have a desktop and a start button. I don't mean that.
Okay.
But I'm talking about the low-level componentry there. I mean,
it should work well. And I have to say, but people say, look, I want to use Excel and I want to use Word on my phone. I say, well, you're going to use Windows Mobile because it does work best with Windows and Microsoft products.
Even in the lifetime of Windows Mobile, that's not necessarily been the case, because that Documents to Go application that ran on Palm OS has always been better than the mobile.
Is it? It's
Office
better.
Application.
Really?
I don't know if it is now. Like most people, I haven't looked at Palm in a long time, but it was.
Isn't that funny?
I really feel like they just haven't been aggressive with this thing. You know, part of it is the model they have where, you know, they ship this system and then you don't see it appearing on phones for months and months and months down the road. And then they ship an update and none of the mobile carriers offer the update, or only some of them do. And, you know, depending on the device you had and when you bought it, you might be able to run certain applications and you might be able to upgrade to a new version or you might not. And, you know, there's no incentive for a phone carrier, you know, AT&T, if you go down to the store, I'd like to get the free update to Windows Mobile 6.1, or we could sell you this $200 new phone. How does that sound?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which one do you think they're going to do?
Right. Well, I have the G1 and the iPhone. And I'm liking them both. And I have a 700W upstairs. I haven't plugged it in months, so.
Why would you? I mean, that's like a blast from the past, isn't it?
Right. It really feels old. It feels like a Soviet era tank.
There are always going to be individual things that work better on certain devices. I want to be really clear, because I've had a couple of email threads with people where, you know, they'll pick specific things. You know, yes, you can't do, modem tethering on an iPhone. I know that. I know that because I wish I could do it, because I used to do it on my Verizon-based Windows Mobile phone that I had previously. I do miss that. Yes,
right.
It's not perfect across the board, but I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the iPhone will inspire a generation of smartphones from a variety of companies running on a variety of platforms. And Windows Mobile didn't really inspire anything. You know, I mean, it's just been kind of, you know, lagging along. I don't know what they're doing with it. It makes me kind of crazy.
It's a big company, and it's possible for stuff to fall through the cracks or get stuck in a corner. I mean, it just happens at a company like Microsoft. Whereas that would be, you know, for almost any other company, a major product that you'd put your attention on and you'd focus on.
Yeah, I mean, arguably it's done okay in the market, right? They sold, 18 million copies?
They probably made a lot of money on it, yeah.
Yeah, but you have to wonder how many, you know, millions they could have sold if this thing wasn't a piece of junk.
Let's talk about another area of the Microsoft empire.
Okay.
That is
no, wait, I'm not done dumping on Windows Mobile.
We got it. You don't like
the other
it.
Point I'd like to make, Leo. No,
yes. You know, you and I both are Xbox 360 fans, love it as a gaming platform, and it's another laggard in the Microsoft portfolio. Do you kill Xbox 360?
No. No, this one's key for them.
Haven't they? They've never made any money on it, though, have they?
No, and they never will. Although they talk about it like they do. You know, they can look at the last year and say, hey, we made money in the last year. You know, if you just pretend we didn't spend the $9 billion we wasted before then, everything will be fine. Wow. That's fine. It's actually, you know, like so many things in life, if you argue this the right way, it's actually okay. So in other words, if Microsoft has said up front, look, we're going to lose money on this thing. It's just the way it is. But our idea here is we've got this platform for the living room, which we feel is going to be a huge volume market for the future. And yes, the current version may be loud and it may be this and that, but you know, we're going to get it right one day. And when we do, we'll have all this experience getting stuff into people's living rooms, and we'll be successful doing that. And maybe they will. I don't know. You know, I hope they are, to be honest. The Xbox 360 is a great game system, but it's also a very decent, even exceptional digital media receiver. It has issues around noise, like we said, reliability, and it has some issues around, you know, just hard drive space and some sort of, I guess we might call technical issues. But, you know, it's a pretty substantial system. I've had so many set-top boxes through my house. And I have to say, if it weren't for the noise, I would have been fine with the Xbox 360 all along. And it's the one I've had in my home the longest.
Well, I'm not knocking it. In fact, I prefaced this by saying you and I both love it. I mean, I think it's a great gaming machine. I played a lot of
it is
on it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So the question is, okay, Microsoft spent a lot of money to develop it. They'll never make enough to recoup that. What do they get out of it? I mean, I've heard this argument. It's a platform in the living room, but are they going to capitalize on it?
Well, they said the same
it?
Thing for the Zune, right? In other words, it's expensive. You know, it's like when the Allies invade Europe. You know, you got to throw a bunch of stuff
up there.
Yeah, but
they're a business. They've got to. What do they tell the stockholders?
It's an investment in the future. Because, you know, you write off several billion dollars at one point. It goes off the books. And then years down the road, now you've got the next version of the Xbox, and it's silent maybe, and it's only $200. And, you know, you've already done all the hard work of figuring out how to share things wirelessly, let's say, because no one's going to wire their home anymore. And you strike all these deals with companies like Netflix and whoever else, so you can get movies and TV shows on there. And you become this platform, you know. And I think their hope is that they become, you know, the volume platform for, you know, living room computing, which, if you think about it, is another one of those areas that has a lot of promise but hasn't really panned out yet.
They've been trying to get in that market for ages. I remember the Wizard of Oz house that they planted in the parking lot at CES.
That's right. Well, I for years had a PC in my living room, you know, running Windows Media Center, connected with a spaghetti-like strand, you know, mess of wires to all kinds, you know,
ugly,
cable box.
Ugly.
Oh, good stuff. And it was a neat, to be honest, that system is awesome, the software part of it, you know, but they went the PC route. And, you know, so I had the humorous instance of rebooting my TV when, you know, people were visiting and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
You can go even farther back. What was the, remember Microsoft did a TiVo? What's the name?
Yeah, they did. I think it was called Ultimate TV.
Ultimate TV.
Yeah.
Killed that in like a year. But the same, again, they've been trying to get in this market for as long as I can remember.
Yeah. Those guys have been involved with the Xbox. They've been involved with their set-top box work, which is another little part of the company that doesn't get a lot of press, mostly because they don't have a lot of sales. But if you were to compare the DVR software on your Comcast or Verizon set-top box, which is horrifically bad, right? I mean, it works in the sense that you can record shows and so forth. Terrible software. With what Microsoft has created on the system that nobody in the United States uses virtually, except for 8 people in the Seattle area, Microsoft software is fantastic. They do actually have, from Ultimate TV on, Ultimate TV was actually, it was before Ultimate TV. It was, what was that? Web TV.
Yeah, which is still around. They still make.
So, even goes back further than Ultimate TV.
Yeah.
Back to Web TV. It's a purchase, right? They purchased that company.
Right.
Got those guys. They've been
now
working
it's MSN
on this.
TV, by the way. It's still there.
Yeah, they have that. So all these little products along the way, none of them have been successful. But you can point to the experience you've had. And now here we are years down the road. Arguably, you're never going to make up the money that you spent on all that stuff. I don't know. But what you do have is experience, and now you know.
All I can say is it's good they have a very profitable Windows division to prop up.
Absolutely. These are businesses that wouldn't have lasted on their own.
No,
that's absolutely true. Sure.
I guess this is always a problem, especially a problem in technology, where to succeed, the market expects growth comparable to previous growth. And these technology companies grow at such rates that they're constantly having to look for their second act.
Microsoft is really an old world kind of company now, aren't they? They're not the fresh, hot, young startup anymore.
Right.
The problem is Microsoft grew double digits for so long that people think of Microsoft as a technology company, which of course they are, but they think about them in the business sense or in a stock price sense or in a growth type sense, and they haven't been that company.
Their stock's been flat for years.
Decade.
Yet I still think they feel like, what's next? What's next? We got to keep going. We got to find the next thing.
They're on the treadmill. Yeah, they have to. You're right. Sure.
But they're probably right, because what are they going to do? Sit back on their laurels and say, well, we'll just be a Windows company and we're not going to worry about the consumer market. And
they've always been afraid of turning into the next IBM.
Right.
They are quite obviously the next IBM. I mean, I think the hope for Microsoft is that maybe in the future they'll spin off the cooler, hotter businesses.
Can't do that till they're profitable. I guess Xbox is profitable now if you cut off the past.
Right. If you were able to let that thing go by itself right now, it would be hugely, hugely successful because you don't have that. Yeah. Getting into the video game business, which is an established business.
Right.
It's been around 30 years. Difficult.
Well, look at Sony. Yeah. They said it's going to take 10 years to recoup their PS3 R&D.
They were involved in a technical arms race with Microsoft. Right. You know, it's
kind of interesting. Yeah, it's like the Cold War,
which exactly.
bankrupted the Soviet Union. So I guess the question is, certainly these things, and we should, as technology lovers, we should welcome this. If it weren't for these big companies having these kind of great cash positions so that they could do this deficit investment, deficit spending on these new interesting technologies, we'd never see things like the Microsoft Surface.
Right. Well, the Xbox 360 is interesting to me because as a user, I love the thing. I love the thing and I hate the thing. I've got two of them sitting here on my floor. They're absolutely dead. I believe, with the exception of the one I just bought this summer, that every Xbox I've had through this house, and I'm talking at least actually six of them, they've all red ringed. So there's a reliability issue there. And that drives me crazy just as a consumer, as a user. That's not right. On the other hand, I've spent so many hours, and my son and I play together. We'll play on the Xbox together a lot, and it's been, you know, at least it's something interactive, right? It's not, you're not just plopping on the couch and watching TV. You know, you're doing something in an interactive sense. I do some fun stuff, like once a month we get together with a group of guys up the street. We play, we call it Halo, but we actually play Call of Duty now. But
Halo Club.
There are a bunch of us.
That's fun.
It's like a bunch of 40-year-old guys and my son. But we have anywhere from 8 to 12, 15 guys, whatever it is, depending on the night. But lately, we've been connecting it up online because Call of Duty 4 is actually better when you're online.
Interesting.
And we do a private match. But we have people we know who can't make it to town.
They'll
be home. They can still play.
That's so cool.
And that's amazing.
That is very modern and very cool.
Yeah.
And thank goodness for stuff like that.
What do you think about the term staycation? Have you heard this?
Staycation?
Staycation.
I don't know what that means. It doesn't sound pleasant.
it does sound like something that's imposed on you.
Yeah. You're gonna stay home for your vacation.
Instead of going on vacation, you're gonna stay home.
Yeah. I'm gonna do a staycation.
You're gonna do a staycation. Yeah.
It
sounds like a made up term to me. I like it. But it's so Microsoft is actually promoting the staycation for this winter because they feel that going skiing or wherever you may go on a winter vacation is too expensive. So why not just stay home and you can play with your Xbox 360? You already have. You know, it's less expensive. You can spend some time interacting with other people, perhaps, or just shooting them if that's the kind of game you like. You know, whatever it is.
Will there be mass consumptions of salty snacks and adult beverages? I mean, then I'm staying.
Sure, why not? You could get the hot cider going in the fireplace, boot up your Xbox 360, and
Xbox roasting on an open fire.
Exactly. If the thing red rings, you can use it to heat your home.
Yeah, who needs the open flame? You got your 360.
It is the Xbox 360 is.
I've got my 360 to keep me warm. The snow is blowing. I could see a whole campaign. So are they going to do an ad campaign? That's a great idea.
I hope they do, but yeah, they actually have a press release about this.
They should do it tongue-in-cheek, though, right? I mean, it's, you know. That's sure. Now, I can see Seinfeld doing that. We'll call it a staycation. Yeah. I can see that. That I can see.
It does have that. They didn't. Microsoft did not invent this term. They just.
What do you get when you combine a vacation with staying at home? It's a staycation. I think it's perfect for him.
It's called making lemonade. That's what it is.
Or yeah. You could play Quake using Silverlight. I thought this was kind of interesting.
Did you see this thing?
Yeah. Well, you sent me a note. What is that?
No, I don't know. It's not available yet. Like, there's a young French developer who's working on it. He filmed a video that is available online. He's got some issues to work out, but he basically, this guy's done a lot of video game programming, and he went back to the original Quake. He had seen that Adobe, with great effort, ported Quake to Flash. They had to make all kinds of changes to make it work. And he thought, well, this is interesting. I could, you know, I think he did a version in Java. Let's see if I can make this work in Silverlight. And not only did it work very easily, but he claims that it's 2.5 times as fast.
Wow.
As the Java version.
And we're not talking Doom. We're talking Quake.
Quake, yeah, the original Quake, yeah.
That's pretty cool. It does. Yeah. It looks like the frame rate's pretty good, I have to say. I mean, he's moving around and the textures look good. I'm just looking at the video that he did.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not. Obviously, it's not going to be, you know, the 3D hardware accelerated version of Quake.
Right,
but, you know, when this game first came out, basically most people were playing the, you know, the standard sort of non-3D accelerated, you know, bitmap.
It was on a
version.
Windows 95 box, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, well, that's really interesting.
Quake was a DOS game, as it turns out.
Was it DOS? So yeah, yeah.
There was a Windows executable eventually, but the original game.
If this comes out well, I think I could see a lot of stuff running on Silverlight because it is. It's just the Windows presentation layer, right? So
and that low end game that we talked about. I don't remember the name of it, but the game a couple of weeks ago, where you know it's using yesterday's technology, but it looks great, right. Plays great.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're pick of the week.
Yeah. I mean, this is Quake is a classic. They talk about games I've spent. Hours and hours, you know, up to the wee hours of night playing online with other people. I mean, absolute classic.
I think this is the kind of thing this is the advantage of Silverlight, which is that essentially, if you wrote the game for Windows, you shouldn't have a whole lot of trouble porting it to Silverlight.
Yeah.
I presume.
That's interesting because I think one of the other things that they may talk about at PDC, I hope, is this API they have for creating games that will run on the Xbox and on Zune and on Windows, where you can create a single executable that will run on all three systems. And I'm having a hard time now coming up with the name of that thing. But I believe that those games that are on the new Zune 3 were written with that same programming library. You know, they have a new...
Well, there was an ActiveX library
Wild Tangent.
Wild Tangent. You're not talking about that.
No, this is Microsoft. Okay. No, they're going to allow people to create their own Xbox games and sell them or give them away on Xbox Live. And that's something
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Happening soon. A community.
We had a bunch of people come in on the lab and show really cool games they'd done for Xbox on that platform.
XNA. Jeez.
Thank the chat.
I guess I should have opened the chat room.
Chat room always knows.
Probably 18 people. XNA.
XNA. We're saying XNA. Yay, XNA.
It begins with an X, but I can't think of the name of it. Anyway. Whatever it may be.
You're
going to love this.
Hey, did you do your giveaway? How did that go last week?
Well... it's going good. I've given away 30 books so far.
Wow.
We haven't actually shipped any of them, so maybe that term I'm using a little loose. They're all sitting on my table with the, I've written in them, and, you know, you have to make sure the right ones go to the right people and all that stuff, because they're
dear Jim, thanks for listening.
Yeah, and then you send it to Mary, who's not impressed.
Not good.
So, yeah, that's good. And I'm getting 30 more from the publisher. I'm going to wait until I get back from PDC, because this is too much to deal with. You know, before I go away, but
yeah, that's fine.
So the
technique you used of, you know, announcing it, the time and day and all that stuff, that worked pretty well, huh?
It did work. It did. It's really funny. The most responses I got were actually from the podcast, which is really interesting.
I'm not surprised.
A lot from Twitter and a lot from the site, but the, you know, you get a lot of email. I assume it's obvious to everyone. I can't reply to every single email that I get for those purposes. And I every once in a while, like I could see that someone had written some other kind of a note in there, which is too bad because I can't go through every one of them, you know? So I hope nobody wrote anything important in any of those. But yeah, it did work out. And I like, as we've discussed, I haven't really figured out a great way to do this, but this is an okay way. You know, it works out pretty well. And most people get it, you know, that, you know, follow the rules and do it at the right time and so forth. So, yeah.
We're going to take a break, come back with Paul's pick of the week. And I'm sure something exciting and fascinating, and your software tip as well. But first, I want to remind people, this is the time to rush to your computer and go to gotomypc.com/windows to get your copy of Go to My PC. I've talked a little bit about it. It comes from Citrix. These are the folks who do the, GoToMeeting as well. They are the kings of remote access. Sometimes people say, you know, how secure is it? Because the idea is you're going to go to an internet cafe or a hotel somewhere that's inherently insecure and access your office. Let me tell you, these guys know security. 128-bit encrypted point-to-point for the entire session. It's like a VPN, except it's easier to set up and it works. And it's full screen, just like you're there. So you can run any program, send and receive email access, any network resource. I want you to try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. Just give it a shot. You know, if you've got a business trip coming up, this would be a good time to do it. A staycation, a vacation. You can have a staycation away from work. GoToMyPC.com/windows. Set it up. You click the get it free button and use. Actually, if you go to, I think you don't even have to do that. I think because you go to this URL, that's enough. GoToMyPC.com/windows. I don't think you need a coupon code Windows for that. It is just the greatest. I use it all the time. PC World gave it their world-class award this year for best remote access software. I don't have to tell you how good it is. I just want you to try it. Find new ways to use it. Safe, secure, easy to set up, fast. I know that's important to you. GoToMyPC.com/windows. Give it a try today, won't you? And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. They love the show. They tell me that all the time. All right, Paul Thrott. It is time for your tip of the week.
Okay.
You don't have to. You could just say no. I don't want to do it today. I'm feeling under the weather.
I just had one of those heart-stopping moments where Microsoft emailed me my final PDC schedule.
Uh-oh. Oh, you're looking at it right now? Uh-oh.
I was kind of looking at it and realizing that
it can't be done. It can't be done. It actually can't be done. It's a impossibility.
It's unclear. I'm going to have to bend time to make this work. Okay.
Did you know what else I got from Microsoft today?
No.
I switched on my machine, got a Windows update, off schedule Windows update, security. Yeah.
So what's your take on this thing?
Well, here's the interesting thing. It's the first update for Windows 7.
Oh, does it say that?
Yeah. It's not even out yet. And they're already.
I told you it was done, so nobody believes.
That's how you know
it's done.
It says right at the top. I'm looking at the vulnerability MS0867. It says right at the top. In addition to products that are listed in the applies to section, this article also applies to Windows 7 pre-beta.
Right. So it may be a day or so before we get the true story behind what happened here. I have this suspicion that, you know, they had found this problem and that somebody was going to come out with a hack for it, and they had to rush the fix out. But my big takeaway from it is that it's interesting to me that the newest systems, Vista in 2008, at least, I assume 7 as well, it's only an important update, whereas if you're running an older version of Windows, 2000 XP or Windows Server 2003, it's a critical update because somebody could actually take over your computer.
Very
so if you
serious.
Were looking for an excuse to update to Vista...
Yeah, very
and I
serious.
Think this is another one. So, yeah, I'm curious. You know, as we are recording this, we don't know what the...
They're not real clear. It just says vulnerability in server service could allow remote code execution.
They're not going to... And Microsoft will never thoroughly explain it for pretty obvious reasons, I suppose. Yeah, so I think in the next day or two, someone will look at this and, you know, the people can figure out what's going on and what they're fixing.
It must have been fairly serious. I mean,
they don't do this a lot. Right. The second Tuesday of every month, I think.
Right,
They do their regular security update releases, and this is what they call an out-of-band update because it's occurring not on that day, and it appears to have been rushed out pretty quickly. And so they did one last year. This is the first one they've done this year. They don't do it that often.
It does apply to every version.
Unlike Apple.
Yeah. No, Apple does it all the time. Well, so did Microsoft for a while, and then people said, hey, I can't do an update of the day. So although I have mixed feelings about that, because if you need an update, you need an update. Get it out.
Yeah. Right.
It's not like, but I, if it's because of business, businesses want to vet these. They can't be bombarded with these every few days. Sure. But this affects every version of Windows from XP on up, including Windows 2000. Actually, it goes back to 2000. So whatever it is, it's even Service Pack 1 Vista, and 64-bit.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
It even affects it's serious because I noticed it affects Server Core, which is that really stripped down version of Windows Server. So it's something very close to the.
It's in the core stack of Windows.
It's right down in there. Yeah, it's not out on the periphery.
Wow.
So it is pretty serious.
Also, I see on Dvorak's blog, Bill Gates has started a new company, BGC3.
That's nothing. Who cares?
It's not going to be the next Microsoft. It's like he says it's a think tank. It's just something for him to do.
Bill Gates is dead to me, okay? He walked away from the mothership. He's gone. No, this is just, he does philanthropy now, which is great.
And but, churros. I understand it's going to be a big
churro. He is the conquistador.
Yeah, it's the conquistador. Wouldn't it be funny if he opened a line of shoe stores? And that was the whole thing? That was the whole point?
That was the reason.
That would be funny.
Give him a little bump.
Bill, he's leaving. He needs something to do in his spare time and his golden years.
The world is never going to be as interesting as what you want it to be. I'm sorry.
No, alas. I've been reading too many Neil Gaiman novels, where there's mysteries around every corner.
No mystery.
Make my day. Give me a great tip.
This isn't going to make your day, but in the theme of both the software pick of the week and also with the notion of looking to the future, which is, I think, what we've been doing over the past few tips.
Yes.
I think we're at the point now. I look back and I remember a friend, Brian, I had from Phoenix, who back in the mid 1990s introduced me to the MP3 audio format. And told me that he was going to record his CDs to MP3 format and never use CDs again. And I thought he was out to lunch because, of course, back then we had 20 megabyte hard drives and, MP3 files were pretty big and they certainly weren't CD quality at the low bit rates you had to use at the time. And, here we are. And now I wish I had done things differently. I have recorded my entire CD collection to various formats. I think I've done it three times over the years. The first time I did it with WMA, which I think we can all look back and laugh at now.
There was a
mistake. Seemed like a good idea at the time. But.
Well, only because of the iPod. That's the only reason it's not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but, the beauty of the WMA at the time was you could record them at, 128K, which is fine for listening to them.
Right.
Because it was the equivalent of, say, a 160K MP3
format. Right. Very good quality. Yeah.
It's good quality. Until you have to transcode it to MP3, and then it sounds like this hissing disaster area. So I then re-recorded it in MP3 format.
Is this?
A couple hundred.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's not too bad, except, even today, I have to say, I'm really disappointed at the ability of these applications to find the album I'm actually ripping. And I have, like a lot of people, I have some mainstream stuff, but then I have this weird stuff that's, not necessarily on the shelves of Walmart. So, the album art doesn't come up and it doesn't pick it correctly. It will say it's something that's not. And that kind of stuff drives me crazy.
Yeah,
but
that's a pain.
So I've done it twice now in MP3 format. And I'm basically at the point now where I think MP3, for all its faults, is still the correct format to go with looking forward. Because it just offers the best compatibility. It works with everything. So if I decide to go completely Zune, or if I decide to go completely iPod, or if there's some device coming down the road 6 months from now, which neither of us have ever heard of, we at least know that MP3 is going to work on it. This will always be the case. So, or at least for the foreseeable future until I do it for the fourth time. But with an eye toward the future, I guess I would say if you're still in the business of ripping CDs to disk, if that's what you're doing and you're not buying music online, but you have this collection and you want to move it forward, which is completely acceptable and something you should do, even though it is time consuming, is just make sure you future-proof it. Use a high bit rate. I recommend 256K as a baseline. I would go even higher than that. I try to go up to 320. Use variable bit rate, which will keep the file sizes down a little bit. Although, again, I think with the terabyte size drives we have today. That's not necessarily the big issue that it used to be. And then use the right tool to do that. And this is something where I think I could get some interesting feedback from people, because even if you use Windows Media Player or the Zune, those two applications don't actually have very good CD ripping capabilities, because they don't offer, for example, VBR capabilities on on MP3 format. So I actually use iTunes for that purpose. iTunes is not necessarily the best application, and I know some people out there are cringing at that thought, but in the same way that you can use iTunes for, say, putting album art on DVDs or on movie files, like we talked about a week or two ago, you can also use it to rip music from a CD, but then access that from the Zune or from Windows Media Player. You don't have to keep it in iTunes. It works. It will work anywhere if it's an MP3 format. So whatever you do, if you are an iTunes user, also make sure you go in and change the default settings. You know, on iTunes, Apple has it set up to use AAC by default, which is insane, and Microsoft has it set up to use WMA by default, which is equally insane. So whichever application you are using, just make sure you're going MP3 at the very least, so that these things will play on everything that you may have, you know, now and in the future.
Yeah. Or you ever look at lossless techniques like FLAC? Yes, or APE? Or
yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I think that's just too much complexity for people.
Yeah.
You know, FLAC and things like that are just not compatible enough. And then I've heard people say, well, you know, I'll keep this thing in a lossless format.
Right.
And then I'll convert them to whatever.
Yeah.
I want to. Yeah, I guess you could do that. You know, I just think that's too complex for most people.
Right. And you're right. You know, the quality you're talking about when you do it that way is, you're never going to hear a difference. If you use a high bit rate, you use a very VBR.
I'm in my car, but there's a lot of wind noise or road noise. I'm in at the gym where there's just a lot of noise.
Yeah.
I'm on a plane where I'm lucky if I can even hear the music. So,
and MP3 is not going away.
I don't think so.
What do you rip at 192? Do you rip at 256?
No, I rip at 320.
All the way up. Turn it all the way up.
Yeah, I crank it up. Might as well.
Yeah, and it's still a third the size of a lossless compression.
Yeah. And honestly, there have been, you know, tests. Again, I'm not going to do this kind of test. I just don't. I'm at the point now where I don't even really care. But, you know, people have compared lossless to MP3 and other formats. And, you know, really, after a certain point with MP3 especially, you just don't notice the differences.
No, I agree.
And I'd also point out that this probably it's probably a sweet spot with MP3, somewhere around 160 or 192K.
That's where I think it is. But why not go all the way? Returns. Big deal.
But I just think that the hard, if first go variable bit rate, that will save some space. But I don't really think that space matters too much. You know, you're talking about the difference between a 6 and an 8 meg file or something.
Right.
Who cares?
I agree with you. Maybe if you had a 4 gig Zune or iPod, but... You know, then you
Might those devices have automatic transcoding if you want them to.
Right.
You know, that's something you could do.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your pick of the week for software.
Yes. This comes from a listener reader, Brett Van Wagener, whose name is familiar to me. So I think he must have sent me some other things like this. But I had never heard of this. It's called Format Factory, and it's an awesome application for converting between multiple video, audio, and image formats to other formats, and it supports just about everything. And I've been cranking through some videos on it today. I have this awesome, I don't know if we talked about this in the podcast, Lenovo sent me one of their mobile workstations. It's like a 17-inch laptop. It's got a quad-core processor.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. 4 gigs of RAM, Vista 64. It has a Wacom tablet built into the arm, you know, the wrist rest.
Wow.
You can use the tablet PC features. This thing is fast, and to give you an idea how fast it is, it can rip a 2-hour DVD in Handbrake in 30 minutes, and it can do these video conversions. If you do using this program, Format Factory, I'm looking at it now, 90-minute movie converts from MP4 to WMV in about 30 minutes, somewhere around there, 25 minutes. It's quick.
Wow.
But this application is fantastic. And this is one of those things, you know, I don't know that I'm ever going to go back at this point. All of the video I've ripped is in MP4 format, H.264, which I think is, that has legs. But there are some issues interoperability wise with different devices and so forth. And this kind of application is interesting because if you want to get it down to AVI or 3GP or WMV or whatever, FLV. it can do that, but it can also go from these other formats to the format you want. So you can go back and forth. So if you have, you know, I'm a little retentive about this stuff, but if I have a movie folder, for example, that has a bunch of different videos in it, and two or three of them in their different formats, and I'm going to push them through this just to get everything on the same format, you know, for example. So I've been experimenting with it. The quality is great. And there's not a lot of configuration you can do as far as it pretty much looks at the thing and tries to output it as closely as possible as it can on the other side. Really interesting. So it's absolutely free, and it works great.
It looks, yeah, it does. I wonder if it's based on like Handbrake is something, yeah, like FFmpeg or one of the open source.
Well, the only thing is it does so many different things. If it is, it must be based on a bunch of different things, because it does video to video, but it also does audio to audio and image to image. You know, and the audio and image stuff isn't as necessary, but you know, video conversion is actually one of those things where it's a tough thing to get right. Some video converters, you get the thing done, it takes a couple hours, and then you watch the video and the audio is missynced with the video, which is awful. And this appears to work pretty well, so it's an interesting choice.
I'm going to make a note of it and download it. I do a lot of that. From Formatoz, Formatoz, maybe it's Formatoz, probably is, .com.
Format Factory.
Absolutely free. Paul Thurrott, you will not be free soon. You will be going to beautiful, what is it, L.A., San Diego for PDC. San Diego?
Los Angeles.
You're going to have a great time. Don't think of it as being jammed in and doing a lot. Think of it as a treat that you get to go and bring back a 500 gig hard drive full of Windows goodies.
My intention, yes. If all I get out of this is I'm running Windows 7 when I get home, I'll be okay.
Yeah. Will it be 32 and 64, or will it only be 64? Or
ultimately, it will be both, is what they're saying. I think they should go 60. I think this
just
is the
do
one
it.
They should
just do it. Pull the plug. Pull the plug. Say 64 only. You like 32? Stay with Vista. Otherwise,
I wouldn't be surprised when all is said and done, Windows 7 will be the one where most people are running x64.
I think
32-bit is sort of a legacy, you know.
We're very close right now. I mean, I think a lot of people, new computers buying Vista 64, it just kind of is the thing now.
Yep.
Very close. Make it, Microsoft, make it 64-bit. Let's do it now, Microsoft. You and me together. We're dropping the 32.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Yeah. 8 bytes, 64 bits, or the highway. I'm trying to think of a slogan.
Yeah, there you go.
What would Route Seinfeld 64? Do? Yeah, Route 64. Route 64. I love it. Paul Thurrott, have a great week. Don't forget, Paul's book is out in the stores now, Windows Vista Secrets, a second edition from Wiley & Sons. Of course, you can read his great blogs and posts and informational stuff, tutorials. Comment. It's all there at the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And he's also the news editor for Windows IT Pro and joins us every week. Well, now, I guess, will we be able to record next week, or when do you get back?
We can do it on Friday.
Let's do it Friday.
I will be flying. Is it good? Good Friday? No,
let's do it Friday. I don't know what day it is.
Friday's good. Yeah, it's I'm flying on Thursday, so Friday is fine.
I'm moving it over right now. We will do Windows Weekly Friday. We'll have to change the time a little bit because that's when I'm pumping iron.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, just send me an email.
Make it 4 o'clock your time. You want to do it then?
Yeah.
All right.
Fine. I'll probably be for half asleep. But
yeah, but you'll be jazzed. You'll be excited. For those of you who watch live, we'll do it at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Friday. And we thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.